We're examining President Trump's foreign policy legacy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The president's pursuit to show our country's strength, that America First agenda, resulted in international isolation after 4 years. The administration has pulled out of a number of international treaties and agreements. So will the U.S. revive its participation on the world stage in the Biden administration? Will we rejoin agreements where we sever ties, the Paris Climate Accord, the Iranian nuclear deal? What will relations be like? What do you want? We're at 800-642-1234. Daniel Franklin is diplomatic editor at The Economist. He's been writing about how we need to invest more in diplomacy and in our State Department. Daniel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Well, nations around the world had different reactions to Biden's win. The Kremlin has stayed silent. A foreign ministry spokesman for China waited until November 13th and said, "We respect the choice of the American people." Can we read anything into reaction from world leaders on the election and our relationships as they stand in the world and as we move forward?
Yes, I think you can. I think you've certainly seen a difference between the reactions among Americans' allies in Europe, especially, but also in Asia, welcoming Mr. Biden and acknowledging the election results, and a much more cautious response from some of the more authoritarian leaders. At least China has acknowledged the result, but the silence from Russia, I think, is quite eloquent.
Quite eloquent. What do you see there out of Russia and its non-reaction so far, or certainly not saying a thing?
Well, I think it's wary of President-elect Biden. Mr. Biden actually has said only recently that he regards Russia as the main threat to the main strategic threat to America. China is an economic competitor, an economic rival, in his view, and I think Putin has enjoyed quite a supportive relationship to Donald Trump. Even though it has to be said that during the Trump presidency, the NATO alliance has beefed up considerably and deployed more forces, even up to the borders with the front lines with Russia. So what's happened on the ground is somewhat different from the impression that one sometimes had of a NATO and alliance in trouble. It's actually been strengthened considerably in recent years.
President Trump pushed the America First agenda in his presidency, called himself a nationalist in 2018, accused globalists as putting other nations' interests ahead of the U.S. What will Biden face? What will the Biden administration face when it takes office in January?
Well, I think there'll be an immediate change in tone. Joe Biden is someone who says he fundamentally believes in the strength of alliances. He sees that as a force multiplier, if you like, of American power. You know, on its own, the American economy is about a quarter of the world's economy. When you combine it with its allies in Europe and Asia, it more than doubles that to perhaps about 60%. And when you have that sort of clout behind you, and if you act together in key areas, it makes other big powers like China, like Russia, sit up and pay attention much more than when you're acting on your own. So I think that is the first thing. And then there will be immediate, I think, steps to rejoin some of the treaties and some of the deals, some of the arrangements that Donald Trump left. So on day one, President-elect Biden has said that he will rejoin the Paris Agreement, for example. I think that would be a very big symbolic moment.
Talking with Daniel Franklin, diplomatic editor of The Economist, we're examining geopolitics and the U.S. role in international institutions, looking ahead in 2021. What should President-elect Biden's top priority be when it comes to foreign policy? What are you watching for out of the U.S. on the international stage? Biden has said that he will reenter the Paris Climate Accord. What do you think of that? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Frankel joining us from Grand Marshall. Hi, Frankel.
Good morning. My question is concerning Iran. Iran wants to build nuclear weapons, and if Iran's allowed to build nuclear weapons, surely they put them in the hands of bad guys that would use them against the West. Short of war, how do we stop Iran from building nuclear weapons? God bless.
All right, Frankel, thank you. Daniel, what will be the approach to Iran and the Iran nuclear agreement?
Well, I think Frankel asked a really good question that's going to be right at the front of one of the big issues that Biden has to deal with coming in. He has said he would like to rejoin the agreement, but it's not that simple because, of course, since America left, Iran has moved out of compliance and has got closer towards actually being able to make a bomb, which is a big threat. So he will seek to persuade Iran to move back into compliance and perhaps to widen the agreement to tackle some of the shortcomings that made many people in America very wary, not just Donald Trump, very wary about supporting it in the first place. And that's going to be very tricky. It's not going to happen quickly. So I think you're going to see quite a difficult diplomatic dance there. Biden starts with one advantage, which are the big sanctions that Trump has imposed on Iran, and he can use that as leverage. So in that, and in fact, in quite a few other areas, he does have the leverage that the hard line of the Trump administration has given him if he wants to eventually come back into some sort of agreement with Iran.
John called from Menominee, couldn't stay with us, and is wondering, Daniel, if you can address the Trump administration's failure to hire U.S. ambassadors. John says there's a number of ambassadors a number of embassies that don't have U.S. ambassadors, and wonders what are the implications around the world to that.
I think it's been a real problem, and it's not just ambassadors. There's been a real hollowing out of the State Department. This is a problem that goes back actually some years, stretches back beyond the Trump administration, but it's got an awful lot worse over the past 4 years. Budgets have been squeeze, morale is desperately low, and the share of political appointees has been a sort of modern record high under the Trump administration, which is very demoralizing for the career diplomats at the State Department. This month, actually, a couple of big reports have come back suggesting a whole range of reforms that are needed to tackle what they both describe as a crisis at the State Department. One is a big project at Harvard University. The other is run by the Council of on Foreign Relations, and both suggest a big new investment, that there's a need to inject resources because diplomacy is going to matter more and more in the coming years for America, precisely to deal with big global issues, to deal with China, to deal with Russia, to deal with climate change, pandemics, and so on, and to rebalance American foreign policy, which has been over-militarized in the years, really, since 9/11.
Daniel Franklin is a diplomatic editor at The Economist. We're looking back at the Trump administration's foreign policy moves, looking ahead at geopolitical implications for the Biden administration, and getting your perspective on how the U.S. is viewed on the world stage. What should President-elect Biden's top priority be on foreign policy? What aspects of foreign policy should the incoming administration stay the course on? What should change immediately? What should the State Department look like in the Biden administration? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Daniel Franklin here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing American foreign policy and what comes next in the Biden administration. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. New York Times columnist David Brooks wrote last year, America is withdrawing from the world. The Cato Institute responded with the headline, Wrong, Trump is not an isolationist. What do you think? Is America following a nationalist agenda, or do you think we're in a global leadership position? It's 800-642-1234. Daniel Franklin is diplomatic editor at The Economist, and he's our guide. Daniel, let's look closer at China. And we saw the trade war certainly unravel during the Trump administration. How has our relationship evolved with China?
Well, I think the China relationship is perhaps the biggest contribution, lasting contribution that Trump will have made, resetting that relationship, really focusing on China as a major strategic rival of the United States, and ending, I think, a degree of wishful thinking that there had been under previous administrations, whereby it was thought that if you let China into the World Trade Organization, you increased links and connections with it, it would somehow sort of become more like us. It would come along. And in fact, that hasn't happened. The opposite has happened. China has become more authoritarian, more challenging for its neighbors and for the rest of the world. And so I think rethinking the posture of the United States, but also other countries, persuading other countries to come along to take a different view of China, that's been a huge contribution of President Trump. And it will continue, I think, into the Biden presidency, although I think the Biden presidency will have nuances to, of course, to how it approaches China, with a much more cooperative approach, bringing allies on board to confront China in various forums.
Well, looking in the area of trade in particular, President Trump declined to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and you say it's unlikely that Biden will join the TPP. What route do you see Biden taking on trade?
I don't think he would be keen to join the TPP straight away. Certainly, it would cost a lot of political capital and be hard to get through the Senate, especially if he doesn't control the Senate when the runoff elections have happened in Georgia. So I think that's best for the future. So I think he will seek to have a sort of mixed relationship where you cooperate where you need to, where you can. You certainly cooperate more deeply with China's neighbors, but the democratic-minded, like-minded ones to America. And that's something that already has started to happen under President Trump. We've seen the reinvigoration of what's called the Quad, America, India, Japan, and Australia. Those countries have been conducting joint military exercises. Their foreign ministers have met recently. And you can see those relationships deepening as the threat of China, the perception of the challenge from China grows all around the region.
And the Quad relationship starts to gel. Talking with Daniel Franklin, diplomatic editor of The Economist, we're looking at how the U.S. will handle international relations with a new administration and what you are watching for at 800-642-1234. Rosa is joining us from Waterford with thoughts on foreign policy. Rosa, hi.
Good morning. Well, what I see is Biden will reverse President Trump's trade policies with China. And I say this because if you Google one of Biden's speeches he made years ago, he said a rise in China is a good thing. So there you go. That's going to be our future. I know China lost millions because of President Trump's wonderful trade policy with China, and Biden will reverse that. Or I should say his puppet masters will reverse that for him.
All right, so Rosa is not, you know, sees a totally kind of different perspective here about what Biden's relationship will be with China, specifically on trade. What do you make of that?
Well, I think the big question, and I think Rosa, you know, she's right to raise the point, is what Biden do you get when he becomes president? Do you get the Biden who viewed China in a particular way when he was vice president? Do you in effect get the same policies as you had under the Obama presidency, or do you have a slightly different or rather different Biden whose views on China have changed? And I think you probably get a different Biden in the sense that the idea that the old idea that trade was just going to make China change over time has gone, and I think people, a lot of people have changed their minds who were in the Obama administration, and the line has hardened. And I do credit President Trump for pushing along that change. It was probably underway anyway, but he certainly made it much more obvious and helped to spread it. So I think you do get a different Biden from the one that you had that Rosa was quoting there from some years back.
Yeah, you know, one thing to watch, of course, out of a Biden presidency is how much it will mirror or try to restore Obama's agenda as president and how much he strays from Obama-era policies. What might we see there?
Well, I do think you will see differences. I mean, the world has changed. And yeah, as you mentioned, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we're not going to see America leap back into that. That was something that Obama had championed and was close to completing. China has changed. The whole sense of the importance of climate change, meanwhile, has become even more important. And I think you'll see that as a tool that the Biden administration will use to reinvigorate alliances and to reassert global leadership.
You know, there have been so many severings of treaties and agreements, Article 2s. What do you see in terms of restoring any of those agreements in particular? What are you watching for?
Well, I think the first one we mentioned was the Paris Agreement. I think that'll be back. I think the other one that will be very quickly on the Biden agenda will be the New START nuclear arms deal with Russia, which is set to expire on February the 5th, so just a couple of weeks after Biden will take office, unless the presidents decide to extend it, and they can do that up to 5 years. It doesn't need congressional approval. So that's going to be very soon on the agenda, if it hasn't already been sorted out in the lame duck period of Donald Trump. And I think Biden will definitely want to extend that probably for 5 years.
When you look at the State Department and morale, as you mentioned, being so low, not having the number of employees it needs to do its job around the world, what would be the first steps in rebuilding a U.S. State Department?
Well, the first steps are sort of rhetorical ones, where you start giving some sort of sense that diplomacy and the State Department matters, and you don't disparage America's diplomats by calling it the Deep State Department, which President Trump did, partly in jest, but partly perhaps not. And then I think it does take money and it takes structural reform. There's a lot of internal changes that need to happen at the State Department. The culture needs to change. The career structures need to change. Probably need to encourage ways of getting talent and skills back into the State Department. And there's a sense that it needs to learn a lot from, for example, the US military, which has surge capacity. There is also a possibility, some argue, there should be legislation. The last legislation for the mandate of the State Department was back in 1980 at the time of the Cold War, so perhaps a new Foreign Service Act would set the mission for the State Department for the 21st century.
Daniel, do you think nations around the world will accept the U.S. as it changes its position on foreign policy quite dramatically in some areas and maybe not so in others? You know, how do you roll with that when you're a leader of another country?
Well, if you're an ally of America, you certainly welcome the fact that America is going to be committed to alliances again. But I think there's awareness. There's bound to be awareness, a sense that, well, OK, this is all well and good, but how long will it last? In 4 years' time, could we be back to a very different America again? How can we trust you? A certain amount of trust has been lost, and it takes time and it takes effort and it takes concrete measures to regain that trust. So I think there will be, it's not just back to the same old situation as before President Trump came to power. And I think it's going to take a long time to persuade the rest of the world that America is in it for the long term in the way that it used to be.
Daniel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Daniel Franklin is diplomatic editor of The Economist. We have a link to his most recent article, his reporting at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we talk with a pair of physicians who've started a new clinic to care for COVID-19 patients who are suffering from persistent, lingering symptoms related to the virus. Are you one of those long haulers? 800-642-1234 to join in. We'll talk about the new clinic for what's known as long haulers right after this news update on the Ideas Network.